No one very specifically asked for using the microphone.
Is this better?
Okay. So I'm honored to talk in this very critical just after lunch lecture. I hope I can keep you awake. It's very difficult, I know, from my own experience. Anyways, I will talk about the Jiangsu algebra. And it is revisited. It has been visited many times before. And this is joined with the chairman of this afternoon section. I'm sure he'll allow me to go slightly over time, but I'll try not to. So let me just begin with a definition, kind of bad style, but let me do it nonetheless. If we have natural numbers P and Q, then we look at the algebra Vp, Q, also denoted Ip, Q, but there is a dimension drop algebra consisting of continuous functions from the interval into Mp tensor Mq, such that at the left endpoint it belongs to Mp tensor 1, and at the right endpoint it belongs to 1 tensor Mq. And this algebra we have seen many times. Also okay if P, Q are not natural numbers but supernatural numbers. I probably call those Fn supernaturals. In this case, this would be a UHF algebra. So we have UHF algebras here. And the talk is about the Jiangsu algebra, and let me just write down the theorem of Jiang and Su, published in American Journal of Math in 1999. It says the following: if we let C be the class of inductive limits of direct sums of these algebras just mentioned here, actually it is a slightly larger class, but let me just restrict to this kind of building blocks, then they say that there exists precisely one C star algebra V in this class, such that its Elliott invariant is the same as the Elliott invariant for the complex numbers. And maybe I should say that C is not the complex numbers, and also in parentheses C is unital and simple. The latter could be in theory detected from the Elliott invariant. And they also prove in that paper, what is that? They prove various things, for example that V is isomorphic to Z tensor C, and it is also isomorphic to the infinite tensor product of Z by itself. They show that whenever you have a unital endomorphism of Z, then it is true that this one is approximately unitarily equivalent to the identity of Z. So by this I mean unital endomorphisms. And thirdly, they show that Z tensor B is isomorphic to B for a whole lot of algebras. And let me just here mention for all UHF algebras B. But they prove it for even more than this. Let me just stick with this thing here. And this algebra, I certainly can say, has received a lot of attention. I think much more than they might could have possibly expected. And part of that is due to the following, what we might call a meta-theorem, saying that if A is separable and nuclear, then A is classifiable in a certain meaning of that word, if and only if A tensorially absorbs the Jansu as a bounded mean. I say this is a meta theorem. It's not absolutely clear what I mean by classifiable. This is a pretty clear statement, and to the extent that and it's not, it hasn't improved yet in this generality, whichever way you interpret it, but as we have seen during this conference, there have been many theorems along this line. Maybe particularly our chairman has proved a very remarkable theorem to the effect of this meta theorem here. So one of the problems already raised in Jiang and Su's paper is characterize those A for which A absorbs tensorially the Jiangsu algebra. In other words, characterize the classifiable field algebra if we also assume separability nuclearity. Maybe even we have to assume more here, simplicity perhaps. Another problem would be simply characterize Z itself. I mean, of course, it is characterized in that theorem, but in a slightly indirect and not completely satisfactory way, given how important the C algebra is, if you like to have more slick, nice definitions of it or representations of it. To this end, there is a very nice theorem proved very recently by Dadlard and Thoms. And for this one, we need a class C. And I will just, and I'll write it down, I'll just say this consists of unital field algebras that admit a unital embedding of a subhomogeneous algebra that has no abelian quotient. I will actually address that particular condition a little bit later. It sounds very innocent. And, well, let's discuss it. It's certainly a very, very large class of algebras. It's very hard to find algebras that don't belong here, say simple ones that don't belong here. Okay, so then they say the following, let me just get it straight. Suppose that D belongs to Z, and it is also included that these are unital algebras. Then D is isomorphic to the Jiangsu algebra, if and only if the following two conditions hold. One is that D is isomorphic to its infinite tensor product by itself, and secondly, D should act as a unit for any infinite tensor product, like this one here, for every A in this class C. So this is a very nice characterization of the Jiangsu algebra. And this talk, Wilhelm and I will present another characterization of a somehow different flavor. Let me mention one very central problem. The embedding problem, suppose A is a unital field algebra. And suppose that A has no finite dimensional quotient. Is that the same as saying that A is a unital embedding or map, that is an embedding, from Z into A? Whenever I write things like this, I mean a unital staumorphism. And I mean, one indication is clear, I mean, going from here to here, and the other one is, I mean, really, I think a very deep problem. I'm going to ask problems which are way more specialized than this one, whose answer probably is no. So I think all the more this actually is probably also no. But we don't know the answer. However, with one small answer we have, it is yes, if the real rank of A is 0. So somehow even 0 algebras behave very nicely in this regard of embedding questions. And this is due to Elliot and myself, based on the work of Francesco Herrera and myself. Well, and one reason for asking this embedding problem other than just asking it is that this will give us, I mean, if it were true, let me mark this with a star, and let me mark this, let's see, this one here with a double star. A small remark. If this one holds, then C is the only unital C star algebra for which star and double star hold. And this is somehow an easy intertwining argument, because if you had two algebras for which that hold, that holds, then you could map one into the other and the other into the first. And then you have this condition here, that using an approximate intertwining argument will mean that the two algebras are isomorphic. And even it is possible that you could even ask this relatively to a smaller class of algebras, and then you could still have a similar classification. The next property we are going to talk about is this is definition by Andrew Thompson and Winter. We say that A is strongly self-absorbing. And let me call that SSA for short. If they exist an isomorphism that goes from A into A tensor A isomorphism, such that phi is approximately equivalent to the identity on A tensor 1. So by this map here, I just mean the map from here to here that sends little a into little a tensor 1. And C is strongly self-absorbing. Not only that, we can draw a map of known strongly self-absorbing C-star algebras. That map looks as follows. So I mean the complex numbers and zero are excluded. So we have V, and then we have O infinity. So we have all U at F of infinite type, and we have O infinity tensor U at F again infinite type, and then we have O2. I mean, these are points, and these are big clouds of algebras. And by this I mean that A tensor B is isomorphic to B. This is by definition, and that is a theorem of Thompson-Winter says that this happens if and only if A embeds unitary into B, and the latter requires that A and B are strongly self-absorbing. So we have V is a sub-algebra of infinity, infinity of this one here, and this one here, O2, and so forth. We don't know if there are other ones. I mean, this is one of the big puzzling questions about strongly self-absorbing C-algebras. Is this a complete list or not? And for this end, we could ask the following question. A specific one: is V the only stably finite strongly self-absorbing C-star algebra, say such that its K0 group is set? So at least addressing this part of the diagram, is this unique here, or do we have millions of algebras that could fit here? And we don't know the answer to that question. It will not be answered this lecture either, but we will somehow, with some restrictions, we will confirm this. But with restrictions. Well, let me now slowly address some of the results that we have. And for this one, we need a theorem due to Hirschberg, myself and Winter, saying that if A is a C of X algebra, and the dimension of X is finite, and D is strongly self-absorbing, then A absorbs D, if and only if it does so fiber-wise. And we have examples showing that if you skip this condition, then it's false. Which one?
The one
over there. Yeah, the same pattern to A. Really?
Because then you would get the double example of different.
No, that's the embedding?
Yeah, because it's an infinite product. You would get the central sequence of embedding.
And to forward the really does? Okay, that sounds okay. What do you say about that? Yeah, okay, I see what you mean.
If there's a main group, then you have a...
That's interesting. I feel a little bit shaky about it, but it's interesting. But maybe you can dress up your own talk later on. What? It is needed here, I guess, probably could be right here. Yeah, that's right. I think many of these terms about strong and self-absorbing algebraic K1 intuitivity has to be assumed. Okay, and this leads us to the following corollary.
So what is K1 injective?
K1 injective, I mean, if you went to Bruce's talk, you would know all about it. it doesn't answer. Suppose we have a strongly self-absorbing C-tile device, such that D tends to B is isomorphic to B for all UFF algebraic B, then D absorbs this algebra, the dimension of algebra I wrote down before, when P and Q are infinite supernatural numbers. Okay, infinite may be superfluous, but let me just underline it. I don't mean natural numbers here, I mean infinite supernatural numbers. And the proof is easy to cause. this algebra here is a C of 0, 1 algebra. It is a C of X algebra with X being the interval because it's finite dimensional. And the fibers are UHF algebras. And with UHF algebra, it depends on where we are. At the left endpoint, it is MP, right endpoint MQ, and in between, it is MP, tensor MQ. So hence, each fiber absorbs D by hypothesis, and hence the whole algebra absorbs D. And probably not. I didn't ask for it either. So good. let's give the following corollary. For one thing, that C absorbs this algebra here absorbs the Jansu algebra because Z is an algebra with this property as noted already. And secondly, we can put this algebra unitary into C and again Z back unitary into set PQ. So this one here is clear, and as for this one, well, we can certainly put Z unitary into this one here and hence into this one. So this follows by one. And this basically follows by Jiang and Su's own paper. I made a specific remark about that in a paper by myself, but it's really just following ideas from Jiang and Su's paper. So we have, in other words, the sandwich in between these two algebras here. And that, and this requires, I should say, P and Q are supernatural numbers, infinite, and they should be relatively prime. Relative primeness was not needed here, but it certainly needed sufficient embedding. And what can we use this for? Well, let us make a definition and say that if I have some seed algebra D, and suppose I have phi, which is a unital endomorphism of D, then we call phi trace collapsing. That should be a good descriptive word. Almost don't need to define it, I guess. It's for every pair of traces on D, one has that tau composed with phi is the same thing as tau prime composed with phi. And if I know traces around, I mean, the algebras we're going to consider this for have traces. If I know traces, then every endomorphism would be, have this property. Right, and this then leads to the following, let us call it a proposition. So, again, P and Q are infinite supernatural numbers, and they are relatively prime. Then the first statement says that there exists phi, a unital endomorphism, on this algebra VP, Q, such that phi is trace collapsing. That's the one first part. The second part says that for every such phi, which is trace collapsing, not just the particular one, but for each of them, well, then we can consider the stationary inductive limit. And we can take the inductive limit of that, let me just write it slightly bad style like this, and this is then isomorphic to the Jiangsu algebra. And as for the proof, it really just follows from what we observed already, because we know already we can do like this with unital endomorphism, so we could then just take phi to be this map here. It factors through a seed algebra that has unique trace. And for the second part, well, actually, if you pick this particular phi, it would be kind of easy, it would just be an intertwining argument. But it is true for all phis. And the way to prove that is basically also using Zhang and Su's paper. And using that if phi is of this particular nature, then the inductive limit satisfies the hypothesis. Yeah. Necessarily. One can check that. So this gives us one characterization of the Jiangsu algebra, and we can right away make another small observation. Suppose that D is strongly self-absorbing, then it follows, again P and Q, supernatural numbers that are relatively prime. Then it follows that D is isomorphic to C if and only if D has this sandwiching property. With unital mappings. So this is the only strongly self-absorbing seed algebra for that sandwiching property. And why that is true, again, I mean, you can basically use an intertwining argument for this one here. And look at the stationary inductive limit where you have this map here. And that will give you Z. And then you can look at another one where you go from D back to D using this map here. And since D is strongly self-absorbing, maybe K1 inclusivity will be needed here also. That stationary inductive limit will be isomorphic to D, and hence D and C are isomorphic. Okay. So that was one part of my talk. The next part, we will give another description of the Jiangsu algebra. And the first question we're going to address is the following. For which unital A do we have that Z n comma n plus 1 maps unitary into A? And this is actually quite related to somehow the definition here. It's certainly not unrelated to it, it's certainly related to it. And so this question we're going to try to attack and at least give an if no if condition for it, which at least will shed some light on it, but not, it's not the... Yeah, I mean, yeah, right. Yeah, so you have n is a fixed natural number. Not necessarily, just a unital style morphism. I don't care about embedding. But I might care about embedding, but not today. In order to answer this question, we are going to look at we are going to answer it in terms of the Kohn's semigroup. So let me just try to follow my manuscript. Well, if I could, then it wouldn't be a workshop, would it? I mean, then the work was already done. So remember that, as also from Andrew Trump's talk, that the Kohn's semigroup associated with C's algebra A is obtained by taking positive elements in all matrix algebras over A and modding out by an equivalence relation given by A equivalent to B if and only if they are Kohn's comparable both ways. And this Kohn's semigroup is an ordered abelian group, so it has a plus coming from direct sum, and the ordering comes from this ordering here. Right. And so we have one, let me call it proposition. So we need some facts about this one here, saying that if A is unital, and if the stable rank of, we don't only need the stable rank of A is 1, and this is a cancellation result, then for every pair of elements in the Kohn's semigroup, for every positive element in a matrix algebra over A, and for every positive epsilon, we have the following, that if X plus, and now I look at the class represented by C, so this is an element in the Kohn's semigroup, the one represented by the positive element C, if this is less than Y plus, and then we take the epsilon cut down of C, so we give a little bit away. So maybe it's stricter than just having the same element on both sides. If this happens, then we can conclude that X is Y. And let me say that stable rank 1 is definitely needed for this statement. I mean, this extends to the statement that the corresponding semigroup from projections has cancellation. And for that one, you definitely need maybe a listless one. right, and the statement would have been false, as I said, if you didn't have the epsilon here. And this extends a result by George Elliott. Maybe then later on you have even extended this one.
I think it's interesting if you want to find out if you really use this from something involving compact
order. That's true, yeah.
Which, and that's what, in my statement also involves compact order.
Yeah.
And you can go, and you can, well, and then you can.
It is true, yeah. And from there, yeah, it's not like it's not like a very difficult proof, but it is somehow has this surprising thing that you go using a protection, and you have protection around because you can just add a unit, and then you have that one, and then you use that somehow as an intermediate step to get this result. Well, with that at hand, we can then prove the following theorem. Here is unital, and the stable rank of A is 1. Then the following conditions are equivalent. First one says that, and I also have an actual number n, sorry. First one says that there exists an element x in the consummate group from A, such that n times x less than class of the unit, less than n plus 1 times x. So the unit, class of the unit, can be approximately divided by n. This next statement says that this is somehow translating this into an exact statement about positive elements, that you can find positive contractions which are pairwise orthogonal and pairwise equivalent, such that if you take 1 minus their sum, then this is less than, say, A's 1. So this is how translating this statement, this statement here, to a statement about positive elements. And the third one says that you can embed the dimension drop algebra V n comma n plus 1 unitally, or map unitally into a unital star homomorphism. So these are equivalent, and let me say, the hardest part is definitely going from 2 to 3. I mean, that is many pages of calculation. Basically, what you do here is that you realize that you have this algebra here is given by generators and relations. And somehow using these positive elements and a lot of fiddling around, you can then recreate the generators from this algebra here. It is done using some tricks by Wilhelm, many tricks from Wilhelm, I would say, using completely positive maps of order 0. The implication of 1 to 2, this is where we need the result above, and let me just make a small remark about that. this one here, the first relation gives us actually the positive elements, contractions, pairwise orthogonal, and equivalent, but not this one here. So from this thing here, you pretty easily get these elements here. So all you need now is to prove that this holds. And for that one, you want to choose this equation. So for that one, we want. And somehow this element here can be represented or thought of as being, it's slightly wrong, but it's not completely wrong, it can be thought of as being this element here, this one, slightly manipulating. And we want that to be less than this thing here with this x. So I mean, in a manner of speaking, we want to have this. And what we have, the same thing if you add nx to it. And here you can see how cancellation will come in very handy. But there is a little bit more fiddling involved in it because I've cheated slightly. Okay. This also gives rise to many questions, which I think is good. We don't know everything. I can really understand. I mean, it's nice for why not let it be.
I'm just wondering, I thought that the weights work on the straightforward, so the certain kind of the homogeneous algebra, putting it there as a general.
Could we take it afterwards, Ed, couldn't quite follow. And even so, we have it. It's a good result. And but the questions, so we have now a condition like this one here, so one may wonder, when is that one satisfied? Suppose that A is a unital C star algebra. Well, let us also take an actual number n that we keep fixed, such that all quotients of A have dimension greater than or equal to some number. Let me just call it n of n. It could even be infinity, but some number that will depend on n. Does it follow? That there exists X in the quint-semi group such that the condition above is satisfied. So in other words, this is also asking, I mean, can you just, I mean, more or less going back also to the question from Hilton Gardner and Tom's paper, when can you really make these embeddings? Can you somehow tell on the algebra? Suppose even the algebra is simple and infinite-dimensional. Can we then always solve this problem here? The answer is certainly not known, but it is okay if the real rank of A is zero, even with the possible, the smallest possible number, namely this one here. This is the smallest possible number of which this could be true. And this is a result by Francesca and myself. In the simple case, we don't know it. In the simple non-zero case, we don't know it. We certainly don't know it in the non-simple case. Let me illustrate. I mean, I think this could be an extremely hard question. Let me illustrate in the non-simple case one thing we also don't know. This is what is called the global Klim halving problem. I suppose here that A is a unital, and say it has no finite dimensional quotient. Does A exist X in the quint-semi group, and does A exist in natural number n such that 2 times the class of X less than the class of the unit less than n times the class of X. Actually this last thing here does say that X is full. But you see the similarity between this problem and this problem here. This certainly seems easier. And I mean, Eberhard, Jim and I have thought endlessly about this question. We have made zero progress and we somehow believe the problem is false. So many of these embedding problems probably are false, but we don't know. In the simple case, I have to say, this one is okay if A is simple, trivially, and it's also okay if the real rank of A is zero. Let me also, let me now state the main theorems, and then maybe I will ask the last questions afterwards. So these are by Winter and myself. Suppose D is a unital sheet algebra. Then D is isomorphic to the Young-Sue algebra, if and only if 4 conditions hold. First one says that D is strongly self-absorbing. Second one says that the stable rank of D is 1. Third one says that for every natural number n, there exists x in the quint-semi group, such that n times x less than class of 1, less than n plus 1 times x, and fourthly, tensor B isomorphic to B for all your tensor transformers. B. So this is, in some sense, an intrinsic description of the giant screw algebra. It can be reformulated in many ways. We can take conditions 2 plus 3 and replace them by two other conditions, 2 prime, which says that D is stably finite, that is certainly bigger than requiring Taylor rank to be 1, and 3 prime saying that the constant group of D is almost unperforated. And then probably we should have that D is not a complex number somewhere. We can also replace 1 and 4 by the following, what am I saying here? No. 2, 3 and 4, they can be replaced with the following two conditions. A, the decomposition rank of Kirchberg and Wilhelm-Winter of D is finite, and the next one is that D is KK equivalent to the complex numbers. So this condition here somehow also singles out the Jiangsu algebra as being the only strongly self-absorbing Cs algebra who is KK equivalent to the complex numbers, but with an extra assumption that it has finite decomposition rank. This last statement follows by the classification result of the Wilhelm-Winter. Let me then just mention at the end here, maybe I just briefly indicate the proof. It just has a one line basically, given what we already know. Let me put it up here. Right, so so as for the proof, if you look at the conditions 2 plus 3, so I'm going to prove the first theorem, not the new versions of it, but the first theorem, they imply that for every natural number n, one has a Zn, n plus 1, embeds into D. And then using that D is strongly self-absorbing, one gets that the Jiangsu algebra embeds into D. And this is thanks to a result from Thompson-Winter. And this one, since both V and D are strongly self-absorbing, this implies that C tensor D is isomorphic to D. And one can use 1 and 4 to get that V, P, comma Q, tensor D is isomorphic to Z, P, comma Q, when P and Q are supernatural numbers that are relatively prime. And this is what I mentioned in the beginning of my talk. And this, of course, implies that Z, P, comma Q maps into D. Sorry, but D maps into. This way around, D clearly maps into this, and hence map up into this. And as VPQ maps into the Jiangsu algebra, because this implies that D maps into the Jiangsu algebra, and then again using that they are strongly self-absorbing, we get that D tensor Z is isomorphic to this time Z. And combining these two results, we get C isomorphic to D. Okay, I'll stop here. Thank you.
Okay, any more questions or answers?
Yeah, that's a good question. I always forget that. We don't.
We don't have to, because, I mean, just to get the D left into ZPQ, you can just prove it for D and the Z.
Oh, yeah.
That's
the
only point where you
want to take it. That one is. That one is.
What does this entail
for the version of Google Word? The C-star version?
Yeah,
well, I mean, it basically says that if you take the current over M2,
yes,
can you map that into the given C algebra so that the image is full? And the reason why it's called global film having is that Gim's theorem says that you can always map it into the C algebra, provided the C algebra is not abelian, but you cannot say anything about the size of the image. Yeah, it must be unital. Yeah.
Is there a
simple
way of
writing
it as an
effective
limit?
Which one?
The Z.
Yeah, well, we kind of did, didn't we?
Well, I
thought
it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't actually see it from that, so.
Well, we can get everything, can you? I mean, in a way, you can sit down and construct it. I mean, you have a good point. I mean, of course, I'd like to send this at for the highest bidder, and you already somehow put the price down a little bit.
I'd like to understand.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I mean, so do I. So the story is, I mean, you can somehow write it down explicitly, but then it will not be so very nice anymore. Yeah.
You don't know if it's the only projection that's
it would basically be equivalent, I mean,
yeah,
to this thing here. So, I mean, we can say it under these restrictions, but I mean, it's a very fascinating question in a way, and I guess that there are more questions than answers, I'm afraid. And
Any more? Okay.